I'm going to say the name of a country, and I want you to share with us what are all the images and what are all the thoughts you have about that country that come to mind at first.
Okay.
So the country is Paraguay.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Exists this land? Really? Paraguay. That's a good question.
What language do you think they speak in Paraguay?
I don't know. Really, I don't know. Maybe English or something. I don't know. Exotic language or... I think about sand.
Sand, okay.
And the sea.
And the sea?
Yeah. A lot of flowers and a better weather than here.
Better weather than here, yeah. You think it's warmer there?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think maybe 40, 45 degrees.
40 or 45 in summer?
Yeah, in summer.
Do you think they have snow there?
I don't know. I don't know, really.
All right.
I don't know where this land is or this country is, so...
Do you think it's in the south of the equator or north of the equator?
South.
South, all right.
But I don't know, really.
What do you think they eat there?
Maybe, like... The Asian people is more rice or something like that and punching the food together. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think their alcohol of choice is? You think it's vodka, whiskey, beer?
Whiskey sounds good.
Yeah.
But my first thought was cocktails or something like this.
Yeah,
because of the sand and the sea, I think always about cocktails.
So drinks with umbrellas in them?
Yeah, sure.
With colorful...
Yeah.
So you think it's an island?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
No? How many people do you think live in Paraguay?
Oh, my God. So that's the wrong question because I don't know how many people live in Austria and I live here. So.
Do you think it's bigger than Austria?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think there's any Paraguayans that live in Salzburg?
No.
No?
No.
If I told you there are three and I know all three, would you be surprised?
A little bit.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because I have, when I think about Paraguay, it's a nice country and and summer and yeah. Why should I live in Austria when I can live in Paraguay? So,
without really knowing Paraguay, would you rather live there more than you would rather live?
I don't know. Austria? I don't know. Yeah.
What if I told you there are a considerable amount of German speakers in Paraguay? Would you be surprised by that?
A little
considerable
bit?
Meaning thousands of people, not just 20 or 100 or
really?
200.
Thousand?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
More than 1,000. Thousands, yeah. Would that surprise you?
No, because there are so many people who live in another country because my dad lives in Thailand and so it's, yeah.
And he's not the only Austrian that lives in Thailand.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Right. So people move around the world, just like the three Paraguayans that live here, right?
But it's three.
It's three.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome to Geographical Imaginations. I'm your host, Kevin S. Fox, coming to you from Salzburg, Austria at Radio Fabrik. Tonight's episode, we look at Paraguay, how we think about it from here in Austria, and how Paraguayans think about Austria too. Stay tuned. According to Lonely Planet, the guidebook many people use when they go to travel to a new country, little visited, little known Paraguay is a country much misunderstood. Despite its location at the heart of the continent, it's all too often passed over by travelers who wrongly assume that a lack of mega attractions means there's nothing to see. But it's ideal for those keen to get off the gringo trail for a truly authentic South American experience. Paraguay is a country of remarkable contrasts. It's rustic and sophisticated. It's extremely poor and obscenely wealthy. It boasts exotic natural reserves and massive human-made dams. It's a place where horses and carts pull up alongside Mercedes-Benz vehicles. Artisans' workshops abut glitzy shopping centers, and Jesuit ruins and rural villages lie just a few kilometers from sophisticated colonial towns. The steamy subtropical Atlantic forest of the east is a stark contrast to the dry, spiny wilderness of the Chaco, the location of the isolated Mennonite colonies. In a 2015 Gallup poll of people in 143 countries, it was found that Paraguay is the happiest country in the world. You may know it from World Cup soccer participation during the last, except for the 2014, the previous four World Cups, 2010, 2006, 2002, and 1998. You may have seen Paraguay represented in the 1986 Oscar-winning The Mission, a film about the Jesuit missions in the southeastern Paraguay. You may know it as a hideout for Nazis after World War II. It's a nation of maybe 10 million people, but half, maybe, living abroad. No one really knows. But the question here tonight is, how does one come to learn about this place? And we have with us two of those three Paraguayans who live here in Salzburg, who are also musicians, to help guide us through that sort of process of understanding and arriving at some sort of conceptualization, some imagination, a geographical one, of this country, this landlocked country where there's no beach in the middle of South America. Welcome to Geographical Imaginations. Here we are in one of our summer episodes for 2016, and we have the pleasure to have two musicians from the beautiful country, Republic of Paraguay, from South America, who live here in Salzburg with us. And I want to introduce them, Francisco Gonzalez. Thanks for coming. Gracias por venir, Francisco.
De nada.
Bueno. Y Raúl Rolón, también, and also from Paraguay.
Ah, buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes. In this episode, we're going to do our best to do a little bit of a three-language episode. We're going to do English, Spanish, and a little bit of Guaranese to get a flavor of the Paraguayan culture. So tonight, you know, here on the show, we like to kind of talk about how we know the world that we know a little bit. And what did you know about Austria before you came to Europe on that trip? Did you know much about Austria?
Mm.
No, not really. Not at all. Not even in films, not even in any kind of product, really.
You didn't see The Sound of Music before?
No, not at all. Nothing. I was completely ignorant, blind. I don't know. Not even the worldwide famous Mozart Kugel. Apparently, they're very famous, but in Paraguay, there was no way of knowing that.
Right.
That they are very famous. I think, the only connection was Australia.
Australia. How's the, what do you mean, the kangaroo connection here?
yeah, exactly. That one. The one very well exploited by the Austrians.
You're right. So a lot of people, I guess for the listening audience, a lot of people will mistake Austria for Australia or vice versa. And so even here at some of the tourist shops, you see T-shirts that say, welcome to Austria. We do not have kangaroos, something like that.
So
there's a constant mixing up. How about when you talk about Paraguay? Y cuando hablan de Paraguay, para Francisco,
yeah,
también, ¿qué cosas piensan los austriacos? What do the Austrians think about Paraguay?
Okay, primeramente, cuando te preguntan, ya sea a Raúl o a Miguel, los austriacos, ¿de dónde eres? De Paraguay. No conoce, o sea, que no se entera rápidamente, a no ser que tú le digas Sudamérica.
Yeah.
Sudamérica y luego decir Paraguay. Ah, okay, Paraguay. O, mira, me ha sucedido a mí que me pregunta, ¿y tú de dónde eres? De Paraguay. Ah, Uruguay. No, es Paraguay. No, sucede muy a menudo eso.
Yeah.
Y claro, a no ser, mira, hay gente mayores que capaz conozca más que que la gente joven. La gente, digamos, adulto, no sé, de 60, 65 años, para ver. Sí, me he tocado charlar con personas mayores y sí, lo asocian rápidamente. Ah, Paraguay. Y claro, lo conoce más.
Y acá hay mucha cultura, no es tan famoso igual el fútbol, pero aún se conoce. Entonces
sí.
Entonces sí conocen a Chilavert.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Cada vez que a fútbol, Chilavert. Él es el icono.
Right. So a little bit, just to translate into English a little of that. A lot of times, Francisco's saying he has to give people the region first and say it's South America and then get them to focus and think, okay, oh, Paraguay. But a lot of times the Paraguay and Uruguay confusion, Uruguay, and people remember things about Uruguay, which are similar, yes, to Paraguay, but not quite. Very different in different cultures, different countries. And the other part, too, which we talk a lot about on the show, is how sports in worldwide sports actually influences the way we think about different countries. We talked earlier on the show about bobsledding and how that informs the imagination of people of this region, specifically the Alps, winter sports. But in Paraguay's case, Paraguay really, really making the international soccer or football scene in the mid-90s, late 90s with a superstar goalkeeper who a lot of people will know because he would run up, his name's Jose Luis Chilavert, he would run up and take penalty kicks occasionally. Mm-hmm. He was like a more of a mobile goalkeeper than had been seen previously, and maybe it shaped a little bit the way goalkeeping was done. So Paraguay does kind of enter in the France World Cup, losing to France in I think the quarterfinals or maybe the round of 16. And then I think Paraguay then is now kind of known for being a soccer powerhouse for a country of how many million Paraguayans are there? ¿Cuántos millones? Eh?
6 millones.
Menos de 10.
Sí, sí, menos de 10. Sí. Creo que está entre 6 millones.
6 y 8, ya.
No. 8 millones.
Bueno,
8. O sea, contando los que no están inscritos.
Claro.
Yeah.
Los que no son parte del registro.
Yeah, and so the y quizás hay mucha gente que vive afuera.
También. Yeah. Sí,
so maybe 8 million, yeah. But for a country of 8 million to do well in the World Cup, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that was very good accomplishment.
Yeah, and then repeating it in other World Cups since then.
Yeah.
Although I have seen José Luis Chilavert, he does announcing now for some games, and it looks like he eats a lot of steaks, I think, since his retirement.
He got famous.
Going to give you the name of a country, and I want to hear the first things that sort of flood into your mind when I tell you the name of that country, and it is Paraguay.
I think there is a waterfall, a very famous waterfall there, but I don't remember the name, but that's the first thing that comes to my mind. What else? Paraguay. Well, it's Latin America, South America. What else? The capital. I once knew all the capitals of South America, but I don't remember Paraguay's capital.
Have you ever met anyone from Paraguay?
No, never ever, no.
Is there a difference between Paraguay and Uruguay?
It's a different country, but from the association, there is not much difference in my head.
What language do they speak in Paraguay?
Spanish. Both Paraguay and Uruguay, I think. I think the whole Latin America, except for Brasilia, where it's Portuguese, is Spanish-speaking, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Jopará is a colloquial form of the Guarani language, spoken mainly in Paraguay today. It uses a large number of Spanish loanwords and mixes those words with the grammar of Guarani. In Guarani, Jopará means mixture. And it's this mixture that we present tonight a little bit, the mix of languages, the mix of perspectives, too. 1 foot in Paraguay, Raúl and Francisco, and 1 foot in Austria. We live in a world of globalization, but also we live in a world of mix, and it's been a mixture of cultures since we could probably trace back with migrations of humans moving across physical landscapes and cultural landscapes and affecting change, creating change on landscapes that they leave and landscapes they arrive to. The mix of Guarani and Spanish, this Jopará also means a plate of beans, two different kinds of beans that Paraguayans eat. How this mixture works depends a lot on who you're speaking with. An older person might speak more Guarani and less Spanish. Younger people, especially urbanites, might speak more Spanish with the added Guarani words, and their grammar might be more of a Spanish grammar. Guarani is definitely the language of Paraguay and might be thought of as that, and Spanish might be more of an academic language, a language of the sophisticated. Let's go back to Francisco and Raúl and have a little discussion about language.
Bueno,
¿Cómo describes Paraguay a la gente aquí? Oh, no solo aquí en Austria, pero en tus viajes por Europa. ¿Cómo, si te hacen la pregunta, ¿y cómo es Paraguay? ¿Qué dices?
Ok, buenísima pregunta, porque ya, por todo...
Porque es tu oportunidad,
claro,
ya,
claro,
de
claro.
Informar.
Sí, sí, exactamente. La gente te pregunta, es una buena pregunta, te dice, ¿cómo es Paraguay? Y claro, primeramente se refiere al clima. Te pregunta cómo es el clima. Y,
sí,
y claro, nosotros decimos que ya, un clima bastante caluroso y húmedo. Porque, claro, por la mucha vegetación y claro, el calor es muy...
insoportable,
digamos, de una manera para ellos que no están acostumbrados a, no sé, capaz que un verano bastante caluroso en Paraguay sería como, no sé, 45 grados. Y cuando uno, wow, 45 grados, wow, yeah, se queda con una impresión así que
diría, que es tropical,
sí,
eso es un sitio
con
humedad,
sí,
con
sí,
tal,
sí,
yeah,
sí.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, also it's really that that's a the good presentation of the card, so to say.
Yeah.
That, yeah, we have normally 40 degrees in winter is 30 to 20.
Right.
It can go to 1 or 2 degrees, but that's really rare, and it happens every 10 years. So I said like 50 degrees or mm-hmm. 50, it can be really 55.
Yeah.
And I also I kind of feel, I just think in my family or everyone there, we just complained in Paraguay, like, it's how hot it is. and then I come here, I haven't seen that kind of sun in 8 years, that kind of weather. And the third thing that kind of, it's, if one can speak about it, is the Christmas celebration. When
okay,
when they see the
okay.
photos of our Christmas, they see all these tropical fruits, the flor de coco, the cocos flower, the
right.
watermelon. It's incredible. They cannot imagine.
Right, because the people in the north expect a snow on the ground
yes.
in Christmas. Yeah,
yes.
In Paraguay, it's summertime, and it's probably 45 degrees. Yeah,
they cannot believe that we just are with... with slippers and just with shirts, t-shirts.
Right. and one of the first words in Guarani I ever learned, because Guarani is, besides Spanish, the official language of Paraguay. Many people might not know that, but the Spanish language perhaps didn't take hold as much as it did in a place like Argentina or Chile, and mm-hmm. the sort of indigenous language of Paraguay is still very much alive. And so the first word that I remember learning of Guarani was haku.
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 And then haku tere. It's hot. It's very hot. And those were the two first words. How's the... what's your guys' relationship with Guarani? I mean, is it very alive in your conversations with your parents, with your friends? Is it limited to sort of the jopara, what people say, that the mix, like a real mix with Spanish? How much Guarani do you guys kind of speak day to day?
Well, I'm not at all an expert. I used to approve the exams in Paraguay by knowing the construction of the words, but I never spoke so much
yeah.
in my house. My mom can speak it perfectly, she can teach it also.
Uh-huh.
But in my house we didn't speak so much because it was really not that practical in the part to speak.
Yeah.
And I learned a bit of and the jopara, of course everyone has to speak, otherwise you're lost.
Right.
Yeah. So for me it was I feel it. I feel there's a change in the approach to Guarani. When I speak Guarani, a couple of words in Guarani, I really feel a different person, a different soul.
Yeah, so is it a different connection to your culture? I mean, is language is kind of a window, una ventana,
mm-hmm.
un ventanilla a la cultura. Is that Would you agree? ¿Estás de acuerdo, Francisco?
Sí, mira, lo que pasa es que, bueno, tenemos que retroceder al tiempo por el tema del sistema de gobierno de aquella época, que tuvimos un gobierno dictatorial que duró varios años. Y entonces el guaraní lo quisieron
banear.
Sí, lo quisieron sacar de circulación, digamos. Porque era el arma principal del pueblo, o sea, que para comunicar su malestar en la política, entonces era el arma secreta, digamos, que cuando, porque le llegaba bien la información a la gente del pueblo, a la gente del campo, a la gente del interior. Entonces, claro, el gobierno dictatorial de turno, entonces lo prohibió. Lo prohibió tajantemente que se hable en la familia, que se hable el guaraní.
Yeah.
Prohibió que se enseñase en la escuela. Entonces, más o menos, eso también colaboró capaz para que el idioma, o sea, que el yo para es entre mitad guaraní, mitad español. Entonces, capaz que ahí acrecentó más la influencia o hablar el yo para.
Ya. Yeah.
Y entonces, bueno, cayó la dictadura y gracias a Dios que ahora, o sea, que ya uno puede estudiar como cualquier carrera, es también el tercer idioma oficial del Mercosur.
Sí, ahora, ¿no?
Está el español, el portugués y el guaraní. Y aparte que me he enterado que también en las universidades, por ejemplo, de Brasil, de Argentina, ya tiene la cátedra de guaraní.
Sí.
Y sí, ahora el guaraní en los colegios, en la escuela, en los colegios está bastante...
fuerte.
Está bastante fuerte, sí. O sea que se aprende encima. Y lo más bueno que todas las informaciones, uno, por ejemplo, una información, no sé, te vas al banco, te vas al supermercado y encontrás información en guaraní.
Sí.
Y en ese aspecto yo veo bastante bueno para que no perdamos y que no se muera la cultura guaraní.
Ya se cuida un poco.
Claro,
Se quiere conservar un poco el guaraní. Sí, claro. Ya.
Sí, es una de las pocas, bueno, creo que en toda Latinoamérica, Sudamérica especialmente, que es el guaraní sobrevive hasta el momento como uno de los idiomas oficiales.
Sí.
De indígenas.
Yeah. Sí, sí.
There is this very famous in Paraguay translator, I don't know, literary man. Uh-huh. He translated the Bible, the Don Quixote, and a lot of literature to Guarani. That's really incredible, because how do you make the words? Because if you think that it's an Indian language, how would they call some artifacts that weren't at all thought? So he really created and made alive, written, as a written tradition, not anymore as an oral tradition, but written.
Right, and that's what it takes, someone to kind of, poets, translators, literary people, to kind of keep that language, I think, alive in some ways, and bring it back. So it's circulating again, and not only verbally, but also in written texts. Yeah, so people are seeing it, because I can imagine a lot of people speak it, but wouldn't necessarily know how to read or write it necessarily, because it's such a spoken language, the Jopara, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm going to give you the name of one country, and I want to hear your first perceptions when I say that to you. The country is Paraguay.
Paraguay. Well, South America, jungle, relatively poor. But I was not there yet, so I will visit it.
You will visit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What language do they speak there?
I think Spanish.
Do they? Have you ever seen their soccer team compete?
Yes, I think so. I'm not sure, but I think they participated for several times in the World Championships.
The World Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are excellent soccer players, I think.
They are. You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, a growing multimedia public geography initiative designed to bring together academic and everyday geographical or spatial thinking. We believe everybody is a geographer and a co-maker of spaces. As an inquiry-based project, we ask questions and explore themes through dialogues with different texts and voices. Inevitably, our explorations return to simple yet complex questions. How does blank inform the way I picture the world in my head? And how does that picture in turn limit or expand my place in the world? The main focus of the project is this hour-long radio essay program broadcast monthly from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria. In each episode, we make brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. We reflect upon our relationships with the worlds we inhabit and co-create. While many of the episodes deal with local and regional topics, themes are somewhat universal, and our investigations could inform the geographical imaginations of those living anywhere in the world. For more information about the show, to leave a comment, and get in touch with us, go to the website at www.geographicalimaginations.org. So why not then extend this idea of the jopara, the mix, to a way of thinking perhaps about the world, and in terms of culture, the music especially as a form that's been mixed by intercontinental exchange, we might say. We might even extend that to the tango, or maybe perhaps a more popular form coming from the Rio de la Plata region. But Paraguayan music too, as you can hear the guitar coming from Europe, and also famous in Paraguayan music is the harp. But let's continue, I guess, speaking about this idea of the mix in the jopara as a way of thinking about our world.
Yeah, porque en cualquier casa, digamos, uno encuentra una guitarra, uno encuentra un arpa. Y claro, en las reuniones ya se juntan, reuniones familiares o acontecimientos, y claro, ya empiezan a tocar. Y claro, son temas que aún está vigente. Claro que ahora también con nuevos músicos, que así como nosotros que salieron de Paraguay también a estudiar, regresan y claro, quiere promover el tema folclórico y claro, hace sus propios arreglos y ya una pequeña fusión ya con otro estilo, digamos. Y queda bastante lindo.
Sí.
Hace un año estuvimos con Raúl compartiendo un concierto en Atenas, Grecia.
Ah, sí.
Y conocimos a dos muy buenos arpistas paraguayos y estuvimos hablando mucho y a mí En lo personal me gustó unas cuantas interpretaciones propias del dúo de arpas y que, como te digo, tiene esa fusión, no del típico folclore, sino el folclore para paraguayo, o sea, como la polca con otro estilo, por ejemplo.
Yeah.
Y es muy, muy bien aceptado ese estilo. Y claro, otro guitarrista o otros músicos que también está en esa fusión. Y claro, para hacer algo diferente, para tratar de salir del esquema, digamos, del esquema normal o cuadrado de la música folclórica paraguaya.
Yeah.
Sí.
Yeah. Well, you have this. Paraguay is very, I don't know, if very delicate. How to say situation, because in the 1900s, I mean before and till 1900, middle 20s, in Paraguay there was a fairly good level of musicians. A lot of Europeans coming here to teach. And from that generation, you have José Asunción Flores, Herminio Jiménez, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And from that generation is also Agustín Pío Barrios, the universal Paraguayan, that he kind of remade the concept of Paraguayan music. So it, I would say from that time on till now, till the 90s, late 80s, it stopped.
Yeah.
Now growing the music, but then nowadays we have, for example, I wouldn't want to let outside some people. I will, of course, then, but I would like to mention, for example, Florentín Jiménez, also. What's his name? Ismael Ledesma, composing mm-hmm. for harp,
mm-hmm.
Arrangements and original compositions.
Yeah.
And Diego Sánchez Hase is a very active conductor, composer, and cembalo player.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also very active. He composed a couple of pieces for guitar solo. So for nowadays, it's really growing. It's really flourishing. Our music. But we play the past. We played that.
So you think, yeah, I guess that's a concern of mine too, in talking about folk culture, sometimes it gets placed in the past, and I think I'm concerned, I don't want to have people, and this is part of like how we think about another country, do we think of Paraguay as living in the past, and that's not what I want to sort of promote. In fact, trying to show, I think, by bringing the music onto this program a little bit to show how alive and present that is.
Yes.
Sure, it's rooted in the past and it follows traditions, but like Francisco was just telling us, in what we've talked about in the before, all of us, a little bit, music is always evolving, right? The forms of music are always getting affected by whether that's someone living abroad and then comes back and brings a new sound to something.
Yes.
Or the music itself is just heard at the aristocracy, the party of the aristocracy, and then the next day someone tries to repeat it, and in that moment it's already changed. That's kind of the history of a lot of music, probably people copying it, right? The tango being a form from South America, which I'm sure you get asked about a lot, you know, tangos, because it's the neighboring country, Argentina, is really known mm-hmm. for that. That has this long history of,
yeah,
being a fusion of different forms, and
yeah, our music in that sense never gets old.
Yeah.
Because you really have so much energy, so much fresh ingredients inside it.
Yeah,
and that's really the charges you, and that's for sure what you're saying. It's Paraguay in that way is evolving always with the music.
Yeah,
in that way.
It's, and it's part of the sort of intangible culture. We've talked about that on the show before. It's not a monument. It's not a building. But it's the song that's getting passed down. And now you guys, as the sort of the younger generation now, like you're saying, it's flourishing. There's people are embracing Paraguayan music, Paraguayans themselves playing it. There's a guitar in the house, like you said, and people want to keep it alive and keep it going. And I think that's an important thing to at least look at us and analyze. I think in my approach here tonight, I realize that we run the risk, I guess, of receiving a lot of criticism for perhaps putting traditional music on because, well, I guess many will say that we are traditionalizing Paraguay and Paraguayans and maybe blame us for suggesting that Paraguayans are not part of some modern world and that this would be the geographical imagination that's being promoted. And well, I guess it depends on how we define that modern world too, that we all seem to agree upon. But what are the traditions, I guess, what if traditions, these intangible cultural traditions that we've talked about earlier on the show, you know, do they run the risk of being lost to the homogenization of sounds from around the world? And perhaps we could also argue, too, that that's what has been happening all along. There is a bit of homogenization that seems to be such a bad word. But what about the exchange, the sharing of forms, the sharing of sounds, of instruments that make those sounds, the export, the import, the migration of music, not just musicians, but of the music itself. We could also extend this idea of that we at the show could be blamed for trying to traditionalize Paraguay and Paraguayans through the language, this Jopará that we're talking about. But we really need to think about Jopará, that we hear through it, we see 500 years of mixing If you count the Spanish arrival in the early 16th century, we are now in the early 21st. And there's been 500 years of mixing of these two languages, the Guarani and the Spanish, while maybe going back and forth, one dominating during certain eras and maybe the other, certain geographies where Guarani has dominated in the rural and perhaps in the more traditional, in the cities less so. And you can see that in Paraguay itself, and you could sort of trace and kind of know where someone is from based on the mix that they speak. Is it a Spanish heavy mix, or is it a Guarani heavy mix? And that will tell you something about who they are, maybe perhaps where they are, some of the social geography that goes along with it. We run the risk, I think, of placing Paraguay in the past, and that's a concern of mine, I think, by bringing in the musicians. But I think here we have two young musicians in their early 30s who are living life to the fullest here, enjoying sort of blending what their tradition, their Paraguayan traditional or folk music, and then bringing it to the stage here in Paraguay. They both consistently are performing in the area and perform around Europe, and we'd like to kind of give a shout out to them, I think, through this program. We want to make sure that, I think, our idea is to discuss the ways in which we sort of collectively think about a different place, and how that place in turn maybe even thinks about the places that we're from, and so we leave it at that. We finished tonight's episode with a story that, well, it might not be archived anywhere officially in Paraguay or in the world. It is, perhaps, though, passed down from generation to generation. It's alive in a small village in the center of the country. Alemanque is located about 25 kilometers from Coronel Oviedo, difficult to reach, especially when it rains. There I lived for 2 years working on a farm diversification project with the Peace Corps when I met Don Marcelino Britos, who taught me how to drink tereré and shared with me a caso, or story, that circulates in those parts. I'll give you the gist of it and then let you listen to him in Guarani. The drought is a tough one. All the grasses dry out and turn brown. His grandmother had a mule, and it starts to get really hungry, suffering, and losing weight, so much that its rib cage starts to show. Bewildered about what to do, his grandmother asks around, and one neighbor suggests putting on a pair of green glasses. His grandmother does it, and the mule starts to eat again.
Se cabecude, piru, piru la, se abre la, un babur, y pues ya, no hay cual, no hay cual, ya puta la, un babur, un pibe tiene ya boca culada, ajá, oye, guaso en la, y lente. Yo soy de lente verde.
Lente verde.
Lente verde, hija. Como es la. Un baburo de la. Y lente. Peña y la. Un baburo de patea. Y yo, ah, la. Pasta y verde, pama.
Y eso
es. Y pues, vaya, ¿eh?
From the family Britos and Don Marcelino's caso about the green glasses, we move on to the family Burgos up the hill in Alemanque to hear Ariel and Nelson play some traditional music singing in Guarani or this Jopará. Check out the website for some recipes for Jopará. We'll end tonight with this music. Thanks to Ariel, Nelson, thanks to Francisco and Raúl, and thanks to Don Marcelino there in Alemanque. We'll see you next time. Ciao. Yeah.